Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
That's a beautiful song choice. That's a beautiful song choice. Something I noticed just as we finished that last question of faith, talking about profound and prophetic leadership from women, wasn't that it? I mean, really, it was a song arranged by a woman, Diane Warren, sung beautifully and with great strength by a woman, accompanied by a woman. And Steve was there too. You know, I thought of that joke as I was sitting over there, but frankly, like, the dark side of that joke is that that joke isn't a joke, because so often it's flipped the other way. We talk about men in leadership, and oh, that woman was there too. Like, that's the dark side of that. But it's a reality that's touched on a little bit by that last question of faith. But I want to return to the idea that what a strong choice that song was. And I think it's important to point out that wasn't one choice, right? The author and arranger of that song spent a great deal of time and consideration thinking about melodies and harmonies and piano pieces and chords and what key to put that song in. Our vocalist, Aaron, spent quite a bit of time making choices about what inflections to use in what place. Is the key that the song was originally written in, was that right for her voice, or did the key need to change a little bit? Brenda on the piano had to make choices about what little sort of piano counter melodies to add to the song. Steve on percussion had to make choices about what drum to hit and when and how to make sure that the tempo was steady. Do you understand all the choices that went into just that one piece? And how it moved us. It moved me. It seemed from your response like it moved you as well. And it was a whole collection of choices. You see, friends, we make choices all the time. Here's some choices that I made over the course of this last week. I decided that this picture was going to be on the front of our bulletin. This is a picture that we have when we don't have a sermon series going on. This is the sort of the picture that's not a theme picture. But by the way, Beth took this picture. She's sitting in the back. I think Beth took this. Didn't you take this picture? No, you didn't. All right. Well, then there's a different one that we have that's a beach shot that you took. So my bad. I made choices. I made choices about font size and spacing in the bulletin. You see, sometimes I select a prayer that has a lot of words in it, and so I have to shrink the spaces in between. Or I have to shrink the spaces between the letters so there's not, you know, too many line breaks. Of course, I make choices about what's the call to worship, what are the prayers, what are the hymns, what verses of the hymns we're going to make. You see, there are all kinds of choices that come into our worship gathering. You all, I mentioned this earlier, you all chose to come to church today. But you all made other choices too. You chose what route to travel here. You chose what to wear today. I chose to wear my black and white Chucks. These are probably my favorites. But then, you know, if I'm going to wear my black and white Chucks, I got to wear, I'm sorry, black and red. Wow. Yeah, clearly I'm colorblind. Black and red. These are the Chucks, by the way, that I had custom made when I was ordained. So that's where these came from. But if I'm going to wear black and red Chucks, I got to wear black and red, right? You got to match, of course. Okay. I was in my 20s when I learned about matching. So this is still a little new to me. And then on one hand, this may seem like an unimportant choice. Like what I said earlier, that I feel like God is present in all of our choices, but is God present in our choice about whether or not to wear black and red Chucks? You know how many conversations start because people notice my shoes, and then we continue a conversation, and maybe that conversation even gets into what I do vocationally, which then, of course, can turn into a conversation about faith? You think it's possible that maybe God has an opinion about what shoes I wear? Maybe. I think the choices that we make are important. And I think whether they're the big, really important choices that we make, whether it's about vocation or, you know, great big decisions we make in our lives with our families or how we're going to respond to situations, some of those big choices, surely I believe that God is there. But I think that God might also be present in some of the smaller, more mundane choices that we make. There's a vein of theology called process theology. It's based on the thoughts of an intellectual by the name of Alfred North Whitehead. Process theology would say that in every single decision that is made, that God is present, drawing us into the decision that might be more right for us and more right for the world. Every single decision, whether it's a decision about which socks and shoes I wear or which shirt I wear, which route I come to go to church, or whether or not I acknowledge a call to be a pastor or a person of faith. In every single decision, process theology would tell us that God is in those decisions, guiding us and aiding us and calling us, drawing us forward. I identify that with that. That works for me. And sometimes I can't see why God would care whether I wore my black sport coat or my tan sport coat. Well, in this case, because it matches. But in general, would God care? On the other hand, you know, there's this one little pin that I have in one of my tan sport coats. It has a little rainbow on it. And one Sunday, somebody came up to me and said, I really appreciate that rainbow. And it started a conversation. So yes. Yes, maybe God even cares about those things. In terms of the importance of decisions, I mentioned that I think it's pretty important that we all chose to come to church today, especially in light of the shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas last week, where somebody came into a church while people were in worship, brandishing a firearm and began indiscriminately shooting. 26 people died. And yet we choose to be in worship today when it could be a scary thing. I got to tell you that there are times that I feel a little bit worried, not only because we are a place of faith and that somebody might just want to target a place of faith, but as a particular church that welcomes gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender persons, I wonder, am I going to show up on Sunday morning to find graffiti on the outside of the church? Am I going to show up one morning to find people picketing? Am I going to show up one morning and we get started in worship and somebody's going to come in and start yelling or worse? I worry about those things. As a leader in this congregation, I think it's part of my job to worry about some of those things. But that's not the only thing. We've been facing some challenges with our local community because we offer a community meal. I just want to say this really quickly. I name it a community meal. I don't name it a homeless meal because the people who come and receive a meal and more every week are our community members. And there are unsheltered people who come for that meal, and there are sheltered people who come for that meal. There are people from this congregation who come to that meal. There are people who are retired who come to that meal. It's a community meal. That's the first thing that I say. I was interviewed a couple weeks ago. There was a story in last Sunday's UT, and a couple of things that the reporter asked me. When he named it a homeless meal, I pushed back. I went, no. It's not a homeless meal. It's a community meal because we welcome everybody at this meal. But also some of the critique has been, well, you know, don't give people just a free handout. You gotta put that together with other services. Well, we do that. There's a reason we partner with UCSD's student-run free clinic. There's a reason that we have dental care here. There's a reason we have acupuncture care here. There's a reason we have social workers here. There's a reason we have psychologists here. There's a reason we have members from Feeding San Diego and HHSA here. There are reasons that we have other organizations here who help people to escape homelessness. And yet often I come during the week or even on a Sunday, and I wonder if someone's going to protest or leave an angry letter or say something because we are offering these services to our community. I worry. I'm afraid. But I will not let myself be controlled by fear. Because the God I believe in is a God of hope, a God of light, and a God of life. And I believe that we are all called to make a choice toward that light and that life and that hope. And I'd like to turn your attention to our sacred text today from the Old Testament book of Joshua. This is Joshua 24. This is near the end of Joshua's life as he's sort of summarizing some of what the Israelite people have been through, some of the things that they have faced, but also the choice that they are faced with. Whether or not they will choose the God who brought them out of Egypt, or they will choose one of the other gods. And we'll talk about how we might think about those things today. Let's hear from Tim.
Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel at Shechem. He summoned the elders of Israel, the leaders, judges, and officers. They presented themselves before God. Then Joshua said to the entire people, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your ancestors lived on the other side of the Euphrates. They served other gods. Among them was Terah, the father of Abraham and Noah. I took Abraham, your ancestor, from the other side of the Euphrates. I led him around through the whole land of Canaan. So now we revere the Lord, serve him honestly and faithfully. Put aside the gods of your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates and in Egypt and serve the Lord. But if it seems wrong in your opinion to serve the Lord, then choose today whom you shall serve. Choose the gods of whom your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites in the land whose land you live. But my family and I serve the Lord." Then the people answered, "God forbid that we would ever leave the Lord and serve other gods. The Lord said, the Lord is our God. He is the one who brought us and our ancestors up from the land of Egypt and from the house of bondage. He had done these mighty signs in our sights. He has protected us the whole way we have gone, and in the nation and in all nations through which we passed. The Lord has driven out all nations before us, including the Amorites who live in the land. We too will serve the Lord because he is our God." Then Joshua said to the people, "You can't serve the Lord because he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He won't forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you leave the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn around and do harm and finish you off, in spite of having done good in the past." Then the people said to Joshua, "No, the Lord is the one we will serve." So Joshua said to the people, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen to serve the Lord." They said, "We are witnesses. So now put aside the foreign gods that are among you. Focus your hearts on the Lord, the God of Israel." The people said to Joshua, "We will serve the Lord our God and will obey him." On that day, Joshua made a covenant for the people and established just rule for them in Shechem.
Joshua illustrates the choice that's before the people. They'd been through this profound journey, not only through so much of the late part of Moses' life, but also through the late part of Joshua's life. And he said, you have a choice to make. You can serve this God who drew you out of Egypt, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac. Or you could serve any of these other understandings of God from these local communities. But you got to choose. You know, when I was a teenager, my dad taught me a little bit about decision making. He said, when you're faced with, A or B, like you could choose A and you could choose B, but if you don't choose either one, you're still making a choice. And I feel like as Joshua is talking to these people, he says, you can serve God and you can serve these other gods. Today, I'm not sure that we have a whole lot of concept of other gods in the same way that Joshua may have meant it, but I think that we do have to make some choices. I think there are gods out there, even if we don't think of them that way. We could talk about the God of greed and money. We could talk about the God of power. Do we serve those gods? We could talk about the God of influence, the God of personal safety, the God of fear. We could talk about all kinds of those things. So who is it that we're going to serve? How are we going to give ourselves over? Now, when Joshua is talking to the Israelites, they say, no, we're going to choose the God of Abraham and Isaac. But Joshua pushes back on him. You better be sure. Here's part of how I hear what Joshua says. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Like, if you're going to serve your God, you got to go all in. If you're going to choose your God, you got to choose God completely with all of who you are. To me, this lines up with one of the greatest commandments. Love the Lord your God with everything that you have, all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. I think that's what Joshua is saying to the Israelite people. If you're going to choose God with everything you have, all of it, every bit. But that's hard to do today. That's hard to do these days. Because we're tempted by all these other gods, all this sort of time suck of everything. We're tempted by all these things. But if we're going to choose God, we have to decide if we're going to be all in. We have to choose whether or not we're going to choose God with everything that we are. But again, it's hard. It's hard particularly today because it was just 7 days ago that somebody walked into a church with a gun. But I want to address that fear a little bit because, frankly, I feel it too. And the way I want to address it is I want to talk about some really practical ways to deal with someone who comes in with a violent intent. I'm going to get really practical, and I hope you're not uncomfortable. Actually, I hope you are a little bit uncomfortable. I think that we need to have this conversation. So a week ago, somebody walked into the Baptist church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, with a weapon. And I want to talk about what we're going to do in those things, in that case, if a violent intruder comes. And here's, I want you to know where I got this information. We had three of our members, Dee is standing here in the back, Hope Anderson, who's from our choir, and Ken Brown, our head usher, were all at a training, 2 weeks ago, so before the shooting in Sutherland Springs. But they were in a training put on by the insurance company that covers property insurance for most of the United Methodist churches in Southern California. It's a training by this insurance company on what to do with a violent intruder, what to do. And so we have an acronym that we're going to start with. We've got an image here. ALICE is our acronym. And it stands for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Evacuate. Now, I'm going to tell you what each one of these means, but I want to be really clear about one thing. This is not a linear progression. You don't start with A and work your way to E. You're going to have to be aware of what's happening and choose what's right depending on the situation. Okay? So the first one is alert, and it means a couple of things. Number one, pay attention to what's going on around you. Notice when a long line of people comes in and comes in from the side and comes and sit down. Notice when somebody comes in the back door. Notice if somebody comes out of the back or one of these other doors. Just be alert and aware of your surroundings. But also it means communicate. If somebody walks in with a weapon and somebody sees him, say something. And don't use code words that we're not going to get if we're not thinking about the right thing. You got to be really clear and really overt. If somebody walks in with a gun, say gun. There's somebody with a gun. Like, we can't use code words and things like that because not all of our brains are going to connect that. So you got to say it and name it rightly and appropriately and clearly and loudly in a way that we can all understand it. So we got to be alert. That's what that means. Okay? Lockdown. Now, again, this is not linear, so I'm going through the order of these letters, but just depending on the situation is when you're going to choose one of these things. Lockdown is in a situation where you can be secure in a room and you can barricade those doors so somebody can't get in, okay? So that means, you know, maybe back here in the chapel, there's a door at the front and a door at the back. Those doors can be barricaded, okay? So maybe over here in this, I'm going to talk about the exits in this room in a minute, but back here behind this door is this little sort of concrete hallway. If that's a place to lock yourself down and barricade the doors, that would be one of several places to do that, okay? So lockdown is a way to barricade yourself or in a bathroom or something else, okay? That's that piece. Inform. Get out your phone and call the police. My undergrad study was in psychology, and we read a study about a situation that happened in New York City. I want to say the name of the woman was Kitty Genevieve. If you've studied psychology, you may know about this study. There was a woman named Kitty Genevieve who was sexually assaulted and eventually murdered. And it was in the midst of all these apartments and buildings. You see, there were a ton of witnesses. There were lots of people for the police to interview after the fact. But you see, every single one of them assumed that somebody else would call the police, so nobody did. And in fact, a couple waiting for the police to arrive pulled their chairs up to the windows to watch what was happening. In the meantime, Kitty Genevieve was assaulted. The assaulter left and then came back and killed her. If somebody had called the police right away, some of that may have been addressed. The reason I tell that story is if something happens in this place, get out your phone when it's a safe time to do that. Get out your phone and call the police. If 911 gets 50 calls, great. That's way better than 911 getting zero calls because we all assume that somebody else picks up the phone. Okay? Inform. Inform the people in this room, but if there's a safe way to get down to the nursery to tell them you got a lockdown, get there and do it. We have to inform one another. One of the things the tech crew knows is to leave a mic on. If there's a situation, leave a mic on. And if we can get to a microphone, my mic will always be on in a situation. I think this mic is on. What other mics, Joe? Yeah, the choir mics too, these mics over here. Get to a mic and inform people what's going on if you can do that, okay? Counter, let's talk about counter. If somebody walks in with a weapon, with a firearm, a knife, whatever, if there's not a way to evacuate, if there's not a way to get out, if there are people who can't evacuate because of some physical or other limitations, make it hard for that person to aim. Do you know how to do that? You've got heavy books right in front of you. You've got hymnals. Throw it at their face. I'm serious. Throw it at their face. If you've got keys, if you've got heavy coffee cups, throw it at their face. Make it hard for, it's hard to aim. Lynn's lifting up this stool back there, but that's a great idea. Throw a chair at him. Throw your cane. Yes, Al. Make it hard for somebody to aim their weapon. Okay? But there's another thing. If others are in danger and you can find it in yourself, the courage to do this, it takes five people to take somebody down. If you get one person on each limb and one person on their head, you can take them down. I was going to say take them down safely, but really I'm not worried about that. Take them down. And yes, it's a dangerous thing to face. And it's already a dangerous situation. The E in Alice is evacuate. Now, I want to talk about all the exits from this place, where you are right now. There's, of course, the double doors directly down the center aisle, but there's two wooden doors on either side of the sanctuary. This one on this side goes into the same entry as those double doors. There's an exit out into the courtyard that's over here to the west, but if you go a little bit further north and then out to the east, you can exit through the double doors that come out here on Ingram Street, okay? This wooden door right over here goes into the chapel. Now, that's a place to barricade if that's what's necessary, but if you continue through those double doors, you can also exit out to the east onto Ingram, okay? There's this door here that goes into our choir and music room. From there, you can continue through and then turn to the right or to the north and come out the choir room door and into the courtyard. For those who might be up here on the platform, the choir can go out this way, which also takes you into the choir room and then exit out that way. There's this exit here, which is mostly concrete hallway. It's a short hallway, then exit out to the alley back here behind the building. Those are the exits from this room. Know where they are. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I forgot. There's these sliding glass doors. So there's two sliding glass doors here that both open. Now, sometimes maybe there's a crowd trying to get out those doors. Maybe there's a situation where you got to break through some glass. Let me give you a helpful tip that our guests were taught when it comes to if you got to break through glass. Don't try to break through glass in the middle. That's where it's pretty strong. Break it in the corner. I am angry that it's important for us to talk about this. And it's important for us to talk about this. And the reason I want to talk about this is because I think it's important that we be able to move past our fears, to address our fears, so that if a terrible situation comes up, one, we can deal with it, but two, and here's what's probably really, really important to me, that we can continue to choose to connect with our community of faith in spite of the fears because we are better equipped on how to deal with any situation. That's my point in sharing all these things with you. It can be an easy choice to be overcome with fear and choose not to connect anymore with our faith community because somebody might come in with a weapon. But with these tools, we are better equipped to deal, yes, even with this horrible situation. And we can manage that fear and choose to continue to connect with our community of faith. Because you know what I feel like we're like without our community of faith? Here's a visual for you. When I came in this morning, before Lewis had put all these beautiful candles on here, all I saw were these dead-looking sticks. And I feel like that's how we are without our community of faith. But when we add light, when we add hope, when we add beauty, when we add warmth, that's what it's like to be in our community of faith. I think this display is beautiful. And I think it's beautiful because of the light and the warmth that's here. I think when we go out into the world disconnected from our community of faith, I feel like there's a part of us that's dead. But when we choose to remain connected with a community of faith, I think that there's light. It's light that's not only within us, but I think it's light that can shine. So my friends, we're faced with choices. We're faced with choices about whether or not to come to church every week and to connect with our community of faith. We're faced with choices about whether or not to continue to serve a community meal in the face of criticism. We're faced with choices about whether to go anywhere in our communities where there's a large crowd for fear of violence. We're faced with these kinds of choices every day. And my friends, I submit to you that God is present every time we make one of these choices and calls us to be the people of light. You know, as a person who stands up as a leader in a congregation, as a person who has felt a call to ordain ministry, who is vocationally drawn into this kind of thing, it's easy for me to say, my friends, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But I'm not the only one who gets to say that. But I tell you what I do. When I see on the news that somebody has driven a rented truck along a bike path and killed people, my friends, for me and my house, I will serve the Lord. When I get calls from reporters or see interviews in the newspaper or when I see petitions about serving people in our community, my friends, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. When it comes to advocating for people who are gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender, when it comes to speaking out for those whose voices are silenced, when it comes to speaking up for persons of minority races or sexualities or gender identities, when it comes to speaking out for those who are marginalized, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. When it comes to coming to this place on a Sunday morning, even when I'm afraid that somebody might show up with some kind of graffiti or picket sign or even a weapon, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And I do it with joy. I do it with compassion. My friends, I do it with hope. I think that we have an opportunity to be light in the midst of chaos. I think that we have the opportunity, indeed the duty, the call, to shine our light because the world feels so chaotic. But remember, friends, when the universe was filled with chaos, God said, "Let there be light." Let us be God's light. Friends, we turn now to a time of prayer. I invite you to join me in the spirit of prayer as we lift up the prayers of this community. Holy God, thank you for drawing us together in this place this day. Thank you for giving us the opportunity, indeed the privilege, to shine a light in darkness. Thank you for calling us to face fearful times with hope. Help us, O God, to be your light and your hope in a world that feels so much sometimes like chaos. God, we lift up those who are in need of healing, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual healing, that your presence might be known, that your comfort might be experienced. God, we lift up those who are experiencing loss. God, we lift up the places in the world where there is violence, particularly gun violence. And God, we lift up our leaders, our community leaders, our faith leaders, our state and federal leaders, that some way might be found to reduce gun violence, verbal violence, spiritual violence, and that we might be reminded that that as a nation we are connected profoundly and deeply. God, we lift up all these things to you and any that are left unsaid as we join together in the prayer taught to us by your Son, as we say together, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.